Hello and welcome to the Over Under Achievers. I'm one of your hosts, Knox McCoy. Joining me as always, he's had a hard time remembering the titles of Spider-Man movies. It's Jason Waterfalls.
This one I actually did see. This is Dakota Johnson trying to remember the names of the Spider-Man movies that Tom Holland was in.
Dakota Johnson is on the world's slowest moving press tour for Madam Web, something we all know is trash. She knows is trash. The narrative has now become Sydney Sweeney's in it. I think we like her, don't we? She was fun on Hot Ones. That's basically the marketing for this movie. Dakota Johnson was at, honestly, of all like the movie stars in her life right now, I can't think of someone less interested in promoting their movies, you know? And it's kind of charming. Like, I don't mind it. It's kind of funny.
And especially less interested in hawking Marvel Cinematic Universe stuff than probably Dakota Johnson. And guess what? A reminder for you and everybody, I'm not a Sydney Sweeney fan. And I think that if she is getting touted as going to save this movie or going to save this press tour, I'm taking the opposite. And I'm saying she's to blame for this movie. And maybe 100%.
Okay, I want to get to the Dakota Johnson guesses because they're hilarious. But yes. I need to mark this down. You went from like, I just don't think she's as hot as people say. And now you're doing full heel turn. You're like, she's climate change. She caused it. We don't like it. You're like, you're just like turn the corner on her. She's full villain mode for you.
She's full villain mode. And I think that you need to join me because I'm pretty sure that she's going to ruin Glenn Powell.
Whoa. I like how you triggered me emotionally with something close to home for me that makes me more amenable to agreeing with you and wanting to join your side. Guys listening out there, it is a smart move just to go ahead and get ahead of like, I don't like Sydney Sweeney, and I think she's a bad person. That removes suspicion from being attracted to her. When you do that, you plant your flag of like, she's not someone to worry about for me. I don't even like her. I think she's a problem.
And that's not what I'm doing. I don't think she's a good actress. I think she was.
No, I
think
she's
pretty
Wink.
Good. No. You're.
No, I got it. Wink.
No.
Got
no,
it.
No. I don't get the.
Buddy, I'm hearing you, man. Wink. I'm hearing what you're saying.
There's no wink.
I agree
there
with you.
There is no wink. I'm not doing the bit with you because there is no wink. I don't.
No, it's not a bit. It's not a bit. Wink.
Now, let me tell you this. I can name the actual movies. Far From Home, Homecoming, and Something Else with Home. That's as close as I get to getting 3 for 3.
Dakota Johnson's guesses were Spider-Man, colon, here he comes. Spider-Man, colon, Andy's back. And then The Goblet of Spider-Man. These are all improvements on the actual titles, to be honest with you.
It's just incredible.
I continue loving Dakota Johnson. So as a podcast, we are pro Dakota Johnson. We are con against Sydney Sweeney. Is that official? We locking that in.
Yeah, I really like Dakota Johnson in the Shia LaBeouf movie, Peanut Butter Falcon.
Yep. Can I just give listeners maybe a pro tip? It may be you a pro tip. Speaking of Shia LaBeouf, this weekend, you know, we had a Super Bowl party. So the whole weekend involves like getting the house ready to have people at the house, right? And at a certain point, Ashley wasn't enjoying the process of getting the house ready to have people there, right?
Okay.
So I texted her the video clip. I don't know what movie it's from, but you've probably seen it online where it's Shia LaBeouf and he's like,
Hey, you wanted this, right? You wanted the real deal? That's what this is. Wake up. You're in the middle of it. You want to run? Go ahead. No one's stopping you. Stop complaining.
I texted that to her as encouragement, right? And she didn't appreciate that. So I would say, it's Coach Knox tip, don't do that if the situation's tense with your partner. Because they probably won't appreciate it.
Listen, the fact that you were having a Super Bowl party and messaging encouragement, it was the thought that counts. It sounds right. Like you missed the mark.
Good idea, bad execution. And that's
exactly.
Okay. We're all trying to get better. Jason, what's going on, man? How we doing?
You know, the Super Bowl's over. Football's over. We get a little bit of a respite. I already miss it. On the other hand, it was a long season. I really enjoyed the NFL season. I know not everyone did, including someone else on this podcast. Uh-huh. But I thought it was really great. I got to tell you, though, just straight away, all the off-field stuff surrounding Patrick Mahomes, take it out of here for a second. I think that that might have been the best 6 years that a quarterback has ever had in the history of the world.
I don't know how a serious person can make a case against that, to be honest with you.
He really is freaking incredible.
That overtime drive had the same kind of inevitability I felt when Brady is driving against the Falcons And it wasn't quite the same comeback, right? But it just felt like it's done, man.
There was never a doubt. There was never a doubt because of Patrick Mahomes.
Now, I do need to come clean to the listeners. There was a moment, I don't know if it was the second quarter, when the Chiefs just were not doing much. And I think you, me, and Andre were all aligned. We were Chiefs money line.
Yeah, yep.
There are a variety of different bets, but primarily we were all on the Chiefs. And I texted the group. It was like, I wanted to know, should I cash out? Is it too early to cash out?
Because way too early.
And you guys, you stood resolute. You encouraged me. You kept me in the bet, and it paid off. But I do want to say, like, I did have my doubts, you know?
Absolutely. But the what he does on the field, with so many distractions around him, I just think like he's some kind of a savant. Like, he is so locked in a Tom Brady, Peyton Manning type way on the field, but also has like the Aaron Rodgers, I'm going to say Jay Cutler for the arm, just so like the people that really like Aaron Rodgers' arm strength get mad. So he's got like the Aaron Rodgers on the field stuff. He's got the Jay Cutler arm, you know?
I'm surprised you didn't go Kyle Bowler arm. I know you did love his arm.
I still love his arm. It's just all parts of it. I just got to say, never betting against the guy on the field, but also, honestly, kudos to him. There was never a doubt.
I simultaneously love that I'm living in this time to watch it, but I'm also like, please God, can we figure out how to take them down? And that's a good thing though, right? Yeah. I like great teams.
I agree.
Because you're either, it's fun to root for them, or it's fun to want the giant to fall, you know? Okay, let's go ahead and get into the episode. We've got some overachieving and underachieving to talk about. I want to start with the start, sit, cut though. And specifically, you know, on the podcast, we talked about the Dunkin's Ben Affleck commercial. Great, loved it, fantastic. After that, after we recorded or after it was published, the internet leaked not a Snyder cut, but an Affleck cut of the Dunkin's commercial. I think it's like a 4 or 5 minute cut of what the original form of the commercial was. And I just want to talk through, like, let's start, sit, cut aspects of that commercial. So Jason, like, what was something that you want to start from that?
Dunkin' is sold out of these freaking jumpsuits. Okay. My start for this commercial, because it was every at bat he got, he hit a home run.
Yeah.
Was Matt Damon.
Oh my gosh.
Matt Damon was absolutely perfect in this commercial, because I cannot tell, and this is going to be my sit, because I cannot tell if it's real or not. So I'm going to go back to back here. Is Ben Affleck's accent in this commercial really Ben Affleck, or is he dunking it up?
No, this is really Ben Affleck. That's my theory. 100%.
Because he takes away the accent for movies. So do people from, you know, the UK or whatever. So, you know, that always blows my mind. Like when Idris Elba from The Wire, and then I heard him somewhere else and I was like, I don't know why he's making fun of British people.
Oh my gosh. Well, he's like, hey, it's Tuesday, isn't it, bruv? And I'm like, what?
It's so incredible. But I think he's hamming it up just a little bit, right?
No, because wrong. This is true.
This is even more than The Town. This is more than Good Will Hunting.
Bro, he even says it in the commercial. He says, this is me now. Right. He says, well, like, but he's okay. Telling us
exactly.
This is his confession.
You know? Now. This is him now. Maybe he's dunking it up. I'm trying out dunking it up. Are you? This is something they can have for free. Not a sponsor yet.
This is tough because dunking feels like a dissension, you know, like something's going down, but not, then you're saying up. This is kind
right.
Of like
that's exactly the point.
We're trying to solve underdog, and we came up with overcat. And then someone gently in the episode post comment said, hey, you guys know there's a thing called Top Dog? And I was like, why are you bringing that to this?
That was the one. Top Dog, thank you. That was the one.
Never even thought about it. To your Matt Damon point, he is so sparingly used, and it is a grand slam every single time he speaks. It reminds me of the Joker in The Dark Knight. Hannibal Lecter in Silence of the Lambs, not there for a long time, but there for a very good time. And I was really happy with his inclusion.
While at the same time, J-Lo and Tom both did a tremendous job. Now, you've seen the Snyder cut, the 5 minute cut, which is absolutely incredible. Jack Harlow. I felt like that was Jack Harlow's best acting.
I agree with you. I agree with you completely.
And to the fact that I'm not sure he was acting, because I think that he was maybe not told that Ben is doing this as a bit, or everyone on set was like, I don't think Ben is doing this as a bit. So here we are in a situation where Jack Harlow's like actually trying to talk him out of it. Like,
Hey, man, this is J-Lo we're talking about. You can't just walk into her recording studio. That's not a thing we do. We know that in the biz.
Look, the inclusion of Jack Harlow as an incomprehensible kind of sidekick to Ben Affleck is just chef's kiss. Makes no sense. But Jack Harlow, when Affleck is telling him his plan and Harlow doesn't say anything, it cuts to Harlow and he just does the side nod like, like, I've seen that from you to me so many times. And I just think it's an underrated body language move. Great job, Jack Harlow. Haven't always been the biggest fan. Love what you did there. I think, you know, there's a lot of lines I want to discuss in the start, but I want to what you just said about J-Lo's music. I think the only thing I would sit from this is the implied subtext that J-Lo's music is a very serious and sacred thing, and that we are not to disturb the making of the J-Lo sausage music, because I don't think history has ever proven that as true. You know,
what are you saying? You're saying that you don't respect J-Lo, the musical artist?
No. I'm saying we're treating this like first century Holy of Holies, and you'd have to tie a rope around their leg in case God struck them down and they had sin in their heart, because that's how serious this was. I feel like that's kind of what we're accepting in this commercial, as like Ben Affleck is in the inner sanctum of J-Lo's music career, which I don't know if Dakota Johnson could name three songs besides Jenny from the Block of J-Lo's music career. Does that make sense?
That was going to be one of my three. If I felt like there was about to be an attack, and I was ripping through the back catalog, because music is exactly not my best trivia category. Sure. I think that what is actually going on is that this is tongue in cheek with J-Lo playing along, that maybe she's a diva when she's in the
booth.
I disagree.
I don't think she was aware of that satirical take. I think she's like, yes, this is very serious stuff. You know,
that's exactly my point. Mm. I think
they're working around it.
Yes, correct.
Okay. I got you.
They're working with it, not even around it. They are using it to their advantage, right? Now, Tom, have you seen the other cut where it's Tom and Matt and Ben throwing a football through a tire that's covered by?
Right now, of course I have. Come on, man. Okay. It was like softcore pornography, man.
His throwing motion is still great.
The swish, the like.
No, I don't want to hurt your hands.
Yeah, I don't either. But... Oh!
I know it's the suit, but like, I got to feel like the arm action was there too, man. Oh my gosh. Are we going to get Duncan suits for the live show this summer?
They're sold out.
I mean, they got to get them back, right?
If we can get our hands on those, I'll wear it daily. Like, that's not even a question.
On the plane, off the plane, during the live show, after live show, back on the plane to go home. I'm all in. I'm all in on those suits. Can I hit you with some lines that like really made me laugh when I heard them? When Ben Affleck, I didn't like the narrator kind of Ben staring at the TV, didn't need it as much. I like that it grounded us, gave it a sense of place. But when he's talking to people in the cut scenes, like the B-roll, that's what I really liked. When he said, he's on the phone, he goes,
I even had like a persona like J-Lo or like B-Lo. That's the bad version, obviously.
That made me laugh when he tells the music producers,
this is rough, but it's also finished.
I really like that.
That was the best one for me.
When he's talking to Azra, he says,
I'm a kind of influencer myself of
sorts.
What
do you do?
I do some acting and writing and directing of movies, which are a long form entertainment that were popular in the 20th century.
I love that. And then who is TikTok? It's just good stuff.
Who is TikTok?
It's really good stuff.
Yeah.
Is that cool?
I mean, yeah.
Who is TikTok?
One? I think my favorite moment of all was when he's leaving at the very end and he bumps his head on the Dunkin's banner.
And if that's a choice, he should be commended. Like this whole thing, he should be commended. But I feel like as a society, we don't know where we're at with Ben Affleck.
We don't.
Is he good? Is he bad? Is he a good husband? Is he a bad husband? Is he a good boyfriend? Is he a bad boyfriend? I mean, a lot of evidence out there answers bad on all of those things. But then if he's doing stuff like this, it's just incredible.
It's really incredible self-awareness. I've listened to him in a couple of interviews, and I feel like he's incredibly self-aware. And he's also very picky with who he, shows his like authentic self and like speaks authentically with. But when he does, I've always found it very fascinating, you know, just in like really genuine interviews. The only cuts I had, I don't know if I needed Addison Rae. I don't know if I needed Fat Joe. And I felt like we could have filled out the Dunkings with some better people and not felt like we had to give them lines. Tell me if you have any issues with this. I have Bill Burr. I feel like Bill Burr could have been one of the background dudes. David Ortiz could have been back there. It's right there.
I think David Ortiz is who should have leaned in instead of Fat Joe. Fat Joe is my cut because he was misused. I think he's a great personality. I want more Fat Joe in my life in general.
Sure.
If you ever watch Sunday Conversation, his is absolutely hilarious. But Fat Joe with just the lean in, it felt like it was shot on a green screen and then they just added it at some point.
I agree with you.
But I'm saying that's not on Fat Joe. That's a misuse of Fat Joe.
Again, good idea, bad execution. That's okay. You know, Julian Edelman wouldn't have picked up that phone. He wouldn't have showed up.
But he'd have been too thirsty and creating distractions the entire time.
I get that. Okay, I get that. The last one I had was Kevin Costner from 13 Days when he did the Boston accent during the Cuban Missile Crisis as a Kennedy advisor. It's just Kevin Costner needs a image rehab, and I feel like this would have been a good opportunity for him.
I mean, I'm sure it would have been. I don't think, based on everything going on in Kevin Costner's life, that he's going to agree to be in a satirical Dunkin' commercial featuring just Matt saying. Damon, Ben Affleck, J-Lo, and Tom Brady.
Think about what you just said. And then if you see him,
that's exactly why it works. Yeah,
it's a game changer.
I see it now. I see it.
It's right there. I didn't have anything else on the Affleck cut of probably, honestly, the greatest short movie I've ever seen in my life. And I don't know that it'll ever be surpassed, you know?
We say we want to be challenged. We say we want to hear all sides, but that's not how we act when we seek out podcasts. I'm Mike Pesca, host of The Gist, and I'm crazy enough to think that we are up to the challenge. I challenge myself. I challenge my guests. I invite you in. We'll talk about such issues as masks. I mean, I know they work, but on a population level, the evidence is less than clear. Mass shootings, horrible, but they account for less than 1% of all shootings. Do we do ourselves and our society a disservice when we focus on them? These questions and more explored and challenged every day on The Gist, wherever you get your podcasts.
I think that this just says we need additional cuts. Like for me, Arnold doing that State Farm, neighbor, and all, that was a really good impression, actually. That was really good. Doing that over and over again, I really liked that. I think that that paid off from the buildup that it had. But I got to tell you, I just need more Danny DeVito in my life. I need Danny DeVito in every situation. There was going to be a Twins sequel. I think it was going to be called Triplets. And then something happened. Then something else happened. I don't remember what the story is. I still want it. I want Arnold Schwarzenegger, Danny DeVito, and Pete Davidson in Triplets. Who says no?
I think Arnold. Arnold says no.
Arnold is saying yes to everything these days. And when he was on the Manning Cast with a donkey, I think about that at least once a week. The fact that a donkey just put his giant head in the screen and Peyton and Eli were like, are we going to address this? And then Arnold like had carrots and like food for the donkey just sitting there. Arnold's not saying no to anything. I'll tell you that right now, especially with Chris Pratt in the family. He's making sure that Arnold gets his shine as well.
Do you think, are these guys just too alpha male-y to be like Arnold and The Rock in a movie and we're teaming up?
Listen, I'm going to watch that movie probably 7 days a week.
There's an opportunity. You could do a serious, like some kind of assassin mentor mentee relationship, or it could just be a buddy comedy kind of a fight movie. I would love that. It would be good. They could do a good job. I don't know if they would allow themselves to be with the other though. You know, too much competition.
I think they should put their egos aside, just like Kevin Costner should have, and they should have
done. I agree with you, 100%. Okay, let's go. I want to talk about this Chip Kelly to Ohio State story. So I want to see who do you think is overachieving or underachieving with this. Obviously, Chip Kelly was head coach of UCLA Bruins.
Like 2 weeks ago, he didn't get fired.
That's right. He left of his own accord a head coaching job to go to Ohio State, not in a lateral move, but in a demotion to be the offensive coordinator for the Ohio State Buckeyes and Ryan Day. I did see there was a connective tissue. I think Chip Kelly's first offensive coordinator job, Ryan Day, was the quarterback in New Hampshire or something like that. So they know each other. They have a relationship. I think my big question is, do you think this is a weird exception, or because of the way college football is changing and things are getting galvanized between the Big 10 and the SEC, is this soon to be the rule?
I think this is more about the portal, and I think this is more about NIL than it is about the Big 10. But I got to tell you, I love ripple effects. I love dominoes. I love traffic patterns. When the head coach of Boston College left Boston College head coaching position to go be a defensive coordinator with the Packers, mm-hmm. then Bill O'Brien left 3 weeks later from Ohio State's offensive coordinator position to go be a head coach. And then that made a Big Ten team, UCLA, still weird, head coach leave the Big Ten school as a head coach and go and be the offensive coordinator at Ohio State. That is a wild set of events of two head coaches leaving to be coordinators. Now, let me also point out what that says is Bill O'Brien is in alpha. I've always said he's a good coach. He is a good coach. And he went and did and went and became a head coach when others were leaving the position. So kudos to Bill O'Brien. This is the wildest thing I've ever heard. I cannot even fathom a world where Chip Kelly, who is a big name in college football, leaves UCLA, a fully funded program, right? There are people that, I mean, Nick Saban retired. Like, there are people that are cut out for being a head coach in this new world. And that's why we make fun of Dabo, because we don't think that he's made for this new world. But if Chip Kelly is also not made for this new world, then it's actually probably wilder on the inside than we even know.
I thought that was very well put. I think
Thank you.
There's so much to unpack there. And I think I like to use this reference a lot, only because I feel like it's a very appropriate, apt reference, especially for what we're talking about now. And it's the movie No Country for Old Men, where you don't want to be Tommy Lee Jones in that movie, because he's literally like, I can't live in this world anymore. It's insane now. And I think what you're seeing with like Nick Saban, maybe to an extent Jim Harbaugh, is like, I am not built to survive and function in this world anymore. Some of these younger bucks are, but that's not me. Chip Kelly, the interesting part with Chip Kelly is there was a really vivid conversation that he was going to get fired. So I wonder how much of this was, it's probably not going to go well for me anyway, so I might as well jump. I think what I'm fascinated by, though, is Bill O'Brien going from offense coordinator at Ohio State, pretty well positioned. There's been, you know, a bit of a pathway established of go be a high level coordinator at a high level program, yes. and then you can pick your job or you can go to the NFL because you have those roots. For him to say, actually, I would like to leave one of the two most financially lucrative and visible program conferences and programs within that, and go to the ACC with one of the chronically overmatched programs in that BC and see if I can figure it out. Whereas Nick Saban is like, I'm Tommy Lee Jones. I can't live in this world, so I just need to retire. It feels like Bill O'Brien is in No Country for Old Men. He's like, I'm going to see if I can kill Anton Chigurh with the water gun and live to tell about it. And I don't think he will. I think this is an insane thing that he's done.
So who's somebody in the movie that just like kind of steps aside, doesn't get Antoine, what's his name? Antoine
Chigurh. Anton Chigurh. Bull haircut guy.
Yeah. They don't get Nobody. Cattle prodded. Everybody Nobody. Gets cattle prodded?
Woody Harrelson. I'm sorry, spoiling this, but yeah. Spoiler alert. Everyone gets cattle prodded, essentially, if they cross his path. Woody Harrelson, charming hitman, cattle prodded. Cattle prodded. Everybody gets cattle prodded because Anton Chigurh is like the bleak future. I just don't know what Bill O'Brien thinks is going to happen here. I feel like he's living in like 2009, and it is not 2009.
No, I think you're on the wrong side of this. So first of all, do you know that his wife is a BC grad? So there's connections there. He coached in Boston for a long time. I mean, you know, outside of Boston, whatever.
Sure.
For the Patriots. I think this is a, you know what? Instead of being in the spotlight at Ohio State and just getting reamed, this is the same as Kyle McCord leaving Ohio State to go to Syracuse. This is just like, I'm going to go over here. I'm pretty good at what I do. You know, I'm not a big fan of Kyle McCord, but he's not.
Yeah, he
terrible.
Left because they were like, there's no place for you here. Get on, get.
Well,
yeah,
he also left to go to the team that has the easiest schedule of any of the Power Five imaginable in Syracuse. That schedule next season is insane. But I think this is Bill O'Brien being like, I'm going to jump out of the spotlight for a minute. I'm going to go over here. I'm going to try my best. I'm not a top tier college head coach. I don't want to be with Ryan Day at Ohio State. I found that out within weeks of being here, and I'm going to go over here. And his wife is a BC grad. He coached up in Boston for years and years and years, and then again. So I think that that's actually the play. It's not.
If you're
like
talking, if you're saying like this is
person.
Like a like a slow, like a gradual retirement.
Yes.
And he just wants to be home. I'm into that. I don't think that's what this is, but I think
there's no pressure in BC.
That's true. That's true. But I just, the college game is a different world. And like, so he's going to be texting. He's going to be slacking, voice DMing. He's going to be like Marco Poloing with recruits, and he's going to be like dealing with the transfer portal and the NIL. He's going to deal with like, I develop a guy and he leaves and goes to Ohio State. If he'd said, Ryan Day mandated that I have to grow a beard and dye it black like his, then that's why I'm leaving. I'd be like, that totally makes sense. I get it. But
okay.
Didn't.
Now, see, here's what you've done. You've set an unfair expectation for me and the listener to say that if Chip Kelly doesn't grow a beard and dye it jet black, then Ryan Day is going to continue to lose to Michigan. That's the rule here.
I'll die on that hill. I really will. But can I just tell you, if Chip Kelly did show up in the first game of the season and had a jet black full beard, that might be better than the Dunkin's commercial.
I would denounce every head coach, Mike Shanahan included, that I've always loved over the years. I would denounce all of them and say Chip Kelly is the greatest coach of all time.
Now that we're talking about Chip Kelly this much, I want to have a conversation not in front of Andre, and I want us to be honest about this. Is oh boy. Chip Kelly a more elite visor wearer than Kirby Smart?
He was. I think this is tough. This is tough.
It's tough, isn't it? This is.
I used
really
to be a
difficult.
Visor guy. Then I lost a lot of my hair, allegedly. Who's to say?
Look, I'm of the opinion visor guy without hair, that's the coolest version of visor guy.
No, because of the suntan. That's the
no,
problem.
No, it's fine. Yeah. That's cool. That's a cool risk that you're doing. You're living life La Vida Loca, man.
No, then it looks like you're wearing a white headband all the time.
Yeah, but that's cool, man. White headbands are cool. Full stop. Are you going to look at Alex Caruso and be like, when you wear a headband, it's not cool, actually, dog?
He's inside. They don't have sun lamps in there. It's not a tanning bed when he plays basketball. Okay.
You're trying to have a war on two different fronts here with me about sun exposure and about headband usage. I can only fight one at a time, okay? Headbands on white guys with no hair are cool, objectively. Yes or no?
I mean, actual ones, when they take it off and there's not also a white headband under it, yeah.
But you agree, white guys who are bald, who wear headbands, are cool.
Not when they take a visor off and it looks like they're wearing a headband.
I love tan lines, man. I love it. I think it's great. It's good stuff.
I remember you came back from some tournament and you had the sunglasses tan line.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I think that's a better look when you have like the you know, not tan around the eyes, and then you have that kind of like shadow look of what people
is
do
the
with
raccoon?
Makeup.
Is it the raccoon look? I mean,
I was being nice. I was shadow eyes.
I appreciate you saying I remember when that happened. When that happens every single week and during spring sports with soccer and lacrosse and everything,
looks cool. Just a band across my forehead because I chose to wear a visor instead of a hat. Not so cool. But again, remember, I've got one of those giant like safari hats that I'm wearing. So you know, we're even past just ball cap in the sun.
I read something. Kevin Clark used to be at The Ringer. I think I don't know where he's at now. New York
Omaha
Times.
Productions.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Hello. Thank you. Omaha Productions. I saw him. He posted something. He said, my favorite moment from Super Bowl week was walking behind two gentlemen for several blocks on the way somewhere and listening to them talk copious amounts of trash about the Eagles organization and all the employees. And then when we got to red light, I realized it was Chip Kelly the whole time. And it was while he was working in Philadelphia. So I don't know that he's got the best rep necessarily, but I'm excited to see. This is like a country club version of Jimbo, Bobby Petrino at Texas A&M.
Yeah.
With Ryan Day and Chip Kelly at Ohio State. Because if it doesn't work.
And also, you just named four names. The only person not going to a country club is Chip Kelly. The other three have memberships at multiple country clubs.
This is a very fair point. I think the Ryan Day, Chip Kelly feels like they eat Sunday lunch at the country club. Right. Bobby Petrino and Jimbo Fisher eat barbecue at a gas station for Sunday lunch. Right. I feel like that's the distinction I should have made. Okay. Let's go. Last up, I want to go Traders season 2 check in. So we're going to be real gentle. We're not going to spoil anything. If you're not caught up, it's okay. It's going to be safe. But I want to get your sense of like so far, especially in regards to season 1, which you just watched. So you have a really good context on it. Do you feel like this season 2 is overachieving or underachieving?
I am going to say the season 2 is overachieving. Because it's keeping my interest. I don't know that it was the spike in serotonin that season 1 was, but that was a high bar. That was something unique at a time in reality competitions that, you know, somebody needed to take a swing. They did. Alan Cummings, incredible. The plot, the mechanism of getting rid of, you know, on most episodes, two people every episode,
right,
is you know, the new TikTok, who's TikTok, you know, is the new world of that. So season two had a high bar to jump. I am on the fence about the idea that they don't have any normals. They don't have any citizens, if you will,
sure,
on season two. And that was obviously a distinct choice to get more personalities in there. I found out that Larsa and Marcus Pippen broke up when I was listening to the podcast.
I did see that as well. It's like, wow, man.
So I think that this is a situation where they are overachieving because season one was a lot to live up to, mainly because of Christian being an absolute psychopath.
Sure.
And they had to figure that out. And in season two, they've done a lot of things that they just double down on certain things. And I've really appreciated that. Let's talk about a couple of your people. Parvati. Is she just a crazy person on Survivor?
Let me respond to what you said, because I think a lot of ways you're right of like, it's not fair to compare them because they're very different shows now. One has reality TV professionals, essentially, and in some respect, like game professionals, whereas season one had that mixed in with normals, which I thought was kind of the perfect stew. I think what at least I'm seeing this season or feeling is it almost, I feel like it's making it really difficult for the traders to do what they do because everyone is so calculated and skeptical and considerational of like tactics and behavior. Whereas when you mix some normals in, they're just happy to be there and happy to be in a group and they're not thinking so strategically. So I feel like,
well, they're supposed to be happy to be there, but then there was Christian in season one who was not only happy to be there, completely overplayed every part of the game where other people, yes, where other citizens, civilians were just happy to be there.
Because I think the move is to have the reality professionals always be the traitors and then mix in the normals with other reality professionals. And that's how you go. But to your Parvati question, I feel like it's a symptom of the faithful are really good and familiar with this game format. So it's making it really difficult for the traders to do what they do, you know?
But she's so obvious about so much, and her inability to control her face is the exact same thing that Christian had going on in season one. When Parvati was on Survivor, was she a hero or a villain? You know, assuming there's not a middle.
A little bit of both. I think she's got such villain vibes.
I just don't understand it.
I think a lot of it is you're not subject to the whim. And Survivor, you're not subject to the whims of like someone guessing the reality of your situation. You're just playing the group. And she is elite at playing the group. But in terms of making people not think a certain thing about her, that's really difficult. And once you're in the mix on that, you're done. You're never not in the mix or being suspected, which I thought in season one, what Sari did such a great job at. And I think what Phaedra is doing a really good job at right now.
Phaedra's the queen. I'll tell you that right now. And her and CT need a buddy cop movie immediately.
The big question I have was, what game is CT playing? What does he think is going on? Because he is not, and I know maybe it's the edit. I don't think it is. He's not really engaging. He's not being strategic. He's ruining his relationship with Trishel.
There's not a real relationship there. That's okay. Everything's fine.
And maybe that's what it is.
I won't get into the Trishel of it all, but there is vast history with me and Trishel, with CT and Trishel. I'm not even going to get into it, but there's a lot there. And that was some desperate stuff in the last episode. Let's just say that.
For both of them, if I have to rely on CT for anything, I don't feel great. And I'm avoiding Trishel at all costs.
Now, hold on. Kind of CT in the competitions is all out. You can rely on him.
No. I'm talking about like, if I'm like, CT, I need you to make sure you meet the plumber here. Let him in. He's going to do his thing. I just need you to make sure you let him in and greet him so he can do his work. I don't know that that's going to happen.
Let's just say this. CT is post-plumber. You know what I mean? CT is creating content he's creating mini episodes within the episodes. And that's what he's been hired for. And that's what he's absolutely delivering on. So it's credit to CT.
is made to exist within this world, right?
Correct.
He's like Brooks in Shawshank. He's not meant to go outside. And when he does, he's like, I don't know how to be a person. I know how to backpack Johnny Bananas. I know how to stir up drama with some of my friends after drinking too much on camera. I don't know.
But now he doesn't drink too much on camera. So we have to understand that CT is, if he's not trying to punch someone's head off, which he is capable of, he is there in the margins to make us all happy.
I really think this season, I mean, this is like a episode one spoiler. It's suffering from the Johnny Bananas size hole in the middle of it, you know?
Phaedra hasn't addressed that like every other episode. Like, I think it'd be better if Bananas was here. And that, I don't know if that's just like, I think that's her flirting with CT to like make him a little bit jealous at times. But like CT's addressed it, like they've had to address multiple times. And I don't think that it was, I choose not to think that it was producer like brought out of them, but they're just like, man, this game's fun. This game's really fun. What if Bananas was here? That'd be even more fun.
It's one of the big regrets of my life at this point, honestly. I think the only notes I have, you mentioned Parvati and her like being able to control her face. I don't know if Phaedra's good at that either. She seems really awkward when like, not even.
I know, but she's doing it to her benefit. Like, oh my gosh, that's offensive. And she's actually offended, even though it was the right thing for Dan or Parvati or whoever to say at the time. Right.
I mean breakfast room. When people walk in the door, she's not very natural. She's blinking a lot. And that is a telltale sign.
She has deceiving someone. 12-pound eyelashes on her body. Her body, her choice. But that's got to be a workout, you know. I'll tell you who else is not good at controlling their face. Your boy Bergie, that sleeps with a teddy bear every night. Our favorite part of Traitors, non-spoiler. Our favorite part of Traitors is right when they are deciding when the traitors are deciding who they're going to murder, and they now have these like completely produced shots of all of these people in their bedroom. It absolutely kills us because is somebody that showed up from season one going to drink? Is somebody going to roll their eyes from the one lady that got kicked out? And is Bergie going to have his teddy bear? Is like the three things we're looking for every single time.
It's playing the hits. The last thing I want to ask you was, and this related to Bergie, why am I annoyed by Bergie? And why are you also rooting for the traitors? I find myself rooting for the traitors. Is that normal?
Last season, because of Christian, I don't know that I was rooting for the traitors, but I really loved Ceree. This year, I absolutely am rooting for Phaedra, but not Parvati, and then not Dan, right? So, yeah. Bergie, I think from a competitive standpoint, we are annoyed by Bergie because everyone knows that he's not a traitor. So, that's a locked in absolute faithful. Mm-hmm. And so there's not really any gameplay there other than, I mean, they just have to get rid of him at some point because it's so obvious because he told like a 0% lie. And what I mean by that is like, he just told the truth and his face went dead red in like the first or second episode. So like immediately everybody was like, okay, so you're faithful. You have zero ability to lie. And we all know that now. And it just seems like
That's bad casting, man. That's bad casting.
That's great casting. He is the teddy bear of the season. It's a metaphor within a metaphor.
Duplicity everywhere. You need to be able to see that this could possibly be a duplicitous person. I think I don't like the... He's very got like a sidekick, like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like,
yeah, kind of vibe, but that is a character on a show, and this is a show. So that's wonderful. I do understand what you're saying. But then think about like that. Yeah, yeah. At one point, someone said like, and you're being mean to us. And Bergie goes, and you're being mean to us. Like, it's just yeah, yeah. Right. Like, yeah, yeah is not the star
really
of Sandlot.
Yeah, yeah, from the Sandlot. Yeah.
But you need yeah, yeah in the Sandlot to make that movie pop.
I feel bad because we'll wrap it up. But I don't want to leave this conversation without saying, PD four times, two times, three times, whatever we decided on. I'm impressed with this gameplay. He has surprised me.
I was very not impressed, and now I am. I agree.
I agree with you. 100%. And yeah, just good job. I don't want to give away more, but well done, well played. Well, maybe we'll talk more in depth after the season wraps, so we can talk about specifics. But we'll leave it there.
Yeah, here we go.
Okay, Jason, we asked the Dabs, our dearly and beloved supporters of the podcast newsletter, to send us their life advice questions. We call it ADHD, Ask a Dude, Husband, Dad. And we asked for those questions for the episode we do behind the paywall. So we got a bunch of really great questions. We got stuff about F1 that we're going to talk about here in a second. We got stuff about barbecuing, yard maintenance, who actually can stop Patrick Mahomes, and many more. And to listen to those answers and us discuss those questions, just go to noxacore.com, support us at the monthly or yearly level. Here's a sample of the the kinds of questions and answers that you'll get in an ADHD episode. This comes from this from Andrea or Andrea. I think you noted her and said your name should be Ampersandria. And then she did change her username on the newsletter community to Ampersandria. So I feel like good job by you, good job by her. But she says, what is a way I can get into F1 without making a big commitment? I'll be seeing my F1 obsessed brother-in-law soon and would love to be able to hold a decent conversation on this topic. Important note, my enthusiasm for the sport is even less than Knox's.
Here's my advice. Then don't. Okay. If you have even less interest in what is just absolutely taking over the globe that is F1 and the content that surrounds it, we have principals getting investigated right now. We have Helmut Marko spouting out at the mouth. We have a lot of stuff going on right now. We have the greatest driver of all time, second greatest behind Schumacher, Lewis Hamilton switching teams next year. And you know what? I'm not even going to tell you what team he's on and what team he's going to, because this is offensive. There's so many easy ways to do it, but I'm not going to tell you any of the easy ways to do it, because this is an offensive question. Why are you spending your time doing something that you have no interest in?
No, I think this is, I love this question. I love that she's like, I'm going to have to see my brother-in-law. Maybe it's good. Maybe it's bad. I love that she's trying to find some common ground, and I love she's trying to get into his world. I think that's interesting. I think that's a good way to like seize the conversational reins, you know? But I think to your point, Jason, I would say go one of two ways. I would maybe just go like Google search like top 10 hottest F1 drivers.
Well, Charles Leclerc, number one. So start just 2 through 10. Perfect. Of hottest F1 drivers.
Because you already got that one, because Jason knows that one. But like, get familiar with names and who they drive with. Flashcard it, maybe, if you have to. And you can just start there. And then maybe you can try to get your brother-in-law into a who's hotter conversation. And that's kind of a fun wrinkle for the dynamic, probably. Or this is more of a choice. This is more of a risk. Start trying to have F1 conversations with your brother-in-law, but use people from the Fast and the Furious franchise. You don't need to say, I think all the F1 drivers are from the Fast and Furious movies, but you need to subtly begin to reveal that you do think Vin Diesel's character is an F1 driver. And you did think Paul Walker was, and it was a tragedy that he passed away. Ludacris, like, you need to assert that, because I think he'll really enjoy getting to correct you on that. But also you can kind of take a little victory in how long you can string him along, not realizing that you think Tyrese Gibson is on the F1 circuit. And I think that would be fun.
You can't end a question with important note. My enthusiasm for the question above is even less than Knox's. She says my enthusiasm.
Why? That's perfect context. That lets me know she's just trying to carry conversation. She's not trying to get into it.
I'm sticking up for the brother-in-law. If you don't want to talk F1, don't fake learn F1 and then come try to talk to me about it. Because
the brother-in-law
what?
Doesn't need sticking
do you
up
know
for
why
it.
I'm,
He's just.
Do you know why I'm scorned? Because I have someone in my life that is fake leading me on that they were going to one day get into F1 and then teases me with little questions. Like, this is too personal for me, and this is not fair. This is assault.
Look, maybe I will someday. Maybe someday you'll watch season one of Outlander by yourself. You know, I don't know. We all want things, don't we?
One is going to make one of us very happy, and the other one is going to drive one of us insane. Okay,
and that's this an unfair not assessment an, to make.
This is
of Outlander
an unfair bet.
No, that's you will love most of season one of Outlander. You won't like the last episode. That's a promise. That's a Coach Knox promise. You won't like that.
Yeah, here we go.
Okay, let's go. Came close as a pin. We're starting a new season. Jason, you triumphantly won the previous season. Again, congratulations on that.
In overtime, just like the Super Bowl. How crazy was that?
Oh, that's crazy. I didn't even realize that. We talked about Traitors season two in this episode. So I feel like it's only fair for Cameo. I want to, you mentioned there are not a ton of normals. There's really not any normals on the season of Traitors. I guess the closest you'll get is John, the former politician.
Oh my gosh.
So I thought it'd be good to guess him for the Cameo score. John from Traitors season two.
My son now does a John running impersonation around the house quite a bit. And it's pretty epic. It's one of the best impersonations of it. It's spot on.
It reminds
me of facial structure, everything.
It's like Elder Gorilla in Planet of the Apes is trying to get to safety, but he can't move too fast. And a younger one has to help him, you know, just a lot of ambling, right?
That's incredible.
Okay. I have my score. I will tell you, I had to cross out. I started with.
Here we go. I'm not going to say it this. I'm not going to say it this season,
I'll tell you what I started with. Okay.
I'm going to say, here we go.
I start with 99. Uh-huh. And then I crossed out and I went 101. So how did that affect your...
I'm 150.
Well, talk me through that. Is it just I'm on Trader Season 2? This is probably as good as
I don't think John understands Cameo. I don't think John understands the traders. I don't think John understands anything. And he was just like, I was a politician, so that's got to be above. That's got to be triple digits. And then put on there that I was just on this awesome show. There's another $50.
See, I was hovering around 75 to 100. And then I thought,
which is the true value.
That's why I had a hard time really landing on something for those reasons of like, I'm a politician, but I'm also on TV and I'm scoring. I don't remember what last week was, but it was like 250 just got gassed
back
up
to back
because of Super Bowl stuff. So, okay.
This is going to be like $12 because all my points, but the opposite direction.
John Burkow, he has 694 reviews, 5 stars.
Oh, wow.
You can have him for $110.
Oh, you win. Okay.
And I do want to say it average video length is 6 minutes, 22 seconds.
Yep. That's so that's the value.
Doing mini vlogs.
It's the value you get with John. That's for sure. Cammy was like, John, our servers can't handle your videos. Okay. People are unable to download them to their devices because it's 18 gigabytes. Okay. John,
they can't text it to each other. They have to get a Dropbox link. It's a whole thing, John. Like we don't want to do that. Okay. That is going to do it for this episode of the Over Underachievers. Before we go, we'd like to encourage you to spread the word about the show by tweeting, Instagramming, or just talking about it out loud in front of other people you know. As always, I'm Knox. He's Jason. We'll see you next time.
Affleck on the track.
Don't go away. Don't go away. My heart. Don't go away. My heart. Don't go away.